You want to know the darkest day in the history of the church? It wasn't the Dark Ages. It was during the life of the apostles. It was when the Judaizers convinced everybody, including Peter, that you had to add circumcision and the works of the law to be saved. The gospel came within a hair's breadth of being lost in the first century.
Welcome to The Word Unleashed with Tom Pennington. Tom is pastor teacher at Countryside Bible Church in Southlake, Texas. Hello there, I'm Bill Wright. Today we conclude Pastor Tom's powerful 12-part series, An Aerial View of the New Testament. The second half of Acts covers Paul's life and ministry. The text records his profound conversion, growth in scripture knowledge, arrest in Jerusalem, imprisonment in Caesarea, appeal to Caesar, and his journey to Rome for house arrest. There he continued preaching the gospel, so Acts concludes with the gospel traveling from Jerusalem to Rome. But the gospel didn't stop there. New Testament history ends with the ongoing story of Jesus building his church, with the ultimate conclusion yet to come when Christ returns. The Apostle Paul's ministry is detailed in the book of Acts, and that's where our teacher Tom Pennington returns right now, here on The Word Unleashed.
We read it and it seems like old news to us and obvious, because most of us sitting here are Gentiles, but in the first century, you could not imagine how utterly unlikely this would have seemed until this event. Huge event in the life of the early church. Now, on the heels of that, still as they continue in the area of Judea and Samaria, the church in Antioch develops as a Christian base. Antioch in Syria was the third largest city in the Roman Empire in the first century. Rome was the first largest, Alexandria was the second, and Antioch was the third. Huge, enterprising city, and there are a lot of things that we could talk about in terms of why God would have chosen that city, but it had tremendous influence. And so there, the church has a base of operations. And in that church, the evangelization of Greeks begins. Now here, a new step is taken. You see, Cornelius was a Gentile, yes, but he was a proselyte to Judaism. He had embraced Judaism. Here, apparently, there are Greeks being evangelized who were not proselytes at all. They were just pagans. And it says in verse 21 of chapter 11 that a large number believed and turned to the Lord. It wasn't just a priest here or a few here or there of Gentiles. Now, a large number of Gentiles embrace the truth. So the church in Jerusalem sends Barnabas to check it out. What's going on up there? And he gets there and he absolutely affirms what's happening. And he begins to minister himself, but the ministry keeps growing and growing. And so Barnabas decides, I can't do it alone. I need a colleague. And Barnabas had already known and met Saul, whom the church had sent up to Tarsus, to his hometown, to minister. And Barnabas, according to verses 25 and 26, he goes, verse 25 says, he left for Tarsus to look for Saul, and he plans to bring him back. Verse 26, when he had found him, he brought him to Antioch. And for an entire year, they met with the church and taught considerable numbers, and the disciples were first called Christians in Antioch. Now, there are a couple of interesting things in these two verses. You see the expression in verse 25, to look for Saul? The Greek verb that's translated look far there implies difficulty in finding a person in the papyri. It was hard to find him in Tarsus. Why is that? Well, we don't really know for sure, but I have a conjecture. Remember what Paul said in Philippians 3:8? He said, for Christ, I have suffered what? The loss of all things. It seems very likely that Saul was utterly disenfranchised, disinherited, disconnected. And so when Barnabas gets to Tarsus, he has trouble finding him. Now, the other interesting thing here is in verse 26, it says they were first called Christians in Antioch. Now, this is important because it indicates a separation, even in unbelievers' minds, of Christianity from Judaism. The church of Jesus Christ and Judaism are distinct. In Judaism, these are Christians, followers of Christ, little Christs. So this too marks a major shift among this Gentile church. Chapter 12 is an interesting chapter because it brings us to Herod Agrippa the First and the church. And he has a plot. Basically, you have the first martyr of an apostle. James is killed. Peter is arrested. He intends to kill him also. But Peter, by miraculous intervention, escapes. And then you have the story of Herod's death. And under terrible circumstances, you remember the people kept crying out, verse 22, the voice of a God and not of a man. And immediately an angel of the Lord struck Herod because he did not give God the glory, and he was eaten by worms and died. You have to wonder why this account of Herod is here. And I think the reason comes in verse 24. But the word of the Lord continued to grow and be multiplied. Political figures may step in to harm the church, to kill its leaders, to arrest its leaders. But God is up for the battle. And the word of God continues to grow and to be multiplied. And verse 25 says, Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem and they'd fulfilled their mission, taking along with them John, who was also called Mark. And you have the continued progress of the gospel. Now, at this point in Acts, we have the first New Testament letter written. Till this point, there have been no letters written. But James, at this point, writes the first inspired letter. From James, the half-brother of Christ, and written probably in the city of Jerusalem, he writes to those scattered as a result of the persecution in Acts 12. About 44 AD is when that occurred. But because there's no mention of the Jerusalem Council, which occurred in 49 AD, we figure that it occurred between those years, 44 and 49 AD. He wrote between Acts 12 and Acts 15. The purpose of James' letter was to show the effects of true saving faith and to underscore it. Now that brings us to part 3. Jesus said, "You shall be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in Judea and Samaria, and to the remotest parts of the earth." That begins in chapter 13, verse 1, and continues through the end of the book. We don't know much of what happened to Paul from his conversion in about 32-33 AD to about 45 AD. And that was his ministry in Antioch in Syria when it began. All we know about those years is recorded in 8 verses in Galatians 1. Let me just give you a survey of it. In the years 32-35, he had an early ministry in Damascus, there in Syria, where he'd been converted, as well as in Arabia. We don't know how much of these 3 years were spent in which of those locations, but Galatians 1 tells us about that. The years 35 and 36 AD, he visited Jerusalem for the first time after his conversion. That's recorded also in Galatians 1. And then 36-45, you have 9 years of ministry that are essentially silent. And Paul ministers in Syria and primarily in Cilicia. That is the region in which his hometown was, the hometown of Tarsus. That's recorded in Galatians chapter 1 as well as in Acts chapter 9. What happened during those 9 years? Well, we don't know a lot, but let me give you 3 glimpses of what happened during those silent 9 years of Paul's life. First of all, we know he planted some churches in Syria and Cilicia, his home region, because Acts 15, when they send the Jerusalem Council letter, they send letters to churches in Cilicia. There had been no record of churches like that before, and so the implication is that they, in the book of Acts, I should say, there's no indication of it, and so the implication is that it's very likely Paul was up there planting churches and ministering in his home region. He was also suffering persecution. 2 Corinthians 11 has this list, remember this sort of litany of Paul's sufferings. He speaks of frequent imprisonments, but only one of them is mentioned in Acts, the one in Philippi. He speaks of three times I was beaten with rods, but only one of those is mentioned, and it's the one in Philippi. This was a Roman punishment, and this is the only one that's mentioned in the entire book of Acts. He says three shipwrecks was I a part of, but only one shipwreck is mentioned in Acts, and it occurs after Paul wrote 2 Corinthians, where this list occurred. He says, five times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. None of those are recorded in Acts. And so apparently, and by the way, this last one, five times from the Jews, 39 lashes, these were lashes with a leather whip on a bare back. It was the standard discipline in a synagogue. Acts mentions none of those. What's interesting about all of this is Acts does imply that his early years of ministry were primarily in synagogues. So it's very possible that these things, or at least some of them, occurred during those silent 9 years we know really nothing about. We also know one other thing that happened during those 9 years, and that is a vision from heaven. You remember the vision of the third heaven in 2 Corinthians chapter 12? He mentions there that it occurred 14 years before he wrote 2 Corinthians. You do the math, you find him in those silent 9 years. So that's when God allowed him to see heaven itself. That's all we know about those 9 years of Paul's life and ministry. His life and ministry as we know it really begins with his missionary journeys. The missionary journeys of Paul occur 15 to 16 years after his conversion. Lest you think that immediately he was saved and then was out doing all of those missions, 15 to 16 years later come the greatest missions of his life. Before this, he was primarily Jewish in his thrust, but after this, he was primarily Gentile. Now, I'm just going to give you an overview of these missionary journeys. The first missionary journey is recorded in Acts 13 and 14. It's Paul and Barnabas. They go to Cyprus, the island in the Mediterranean, and to southern Asia Minor, essentially equivalent to modern-day Turkey. The distances they covered were about 1,200 miles round trip, and this happened in 47 to 48 AD. They went from Antioch to Cyprus. They went from there to another Antioch called Antioch of Pisidia, to Iconium, Lystra, and to Derbe. By the way, if you look at that list, the four cities following Cyprus, Antioch, Iconium, Lystra, and Derbe, those four cities are in a region called Galatia. So I believe that Paul wrote Galatians to those churches. So the two chapters here, chapters 13 and 14, are the background for the epistle to the Galatians that he will write soon back to these cities and these churches where he was ministering and involved. Lystra, you remember, is where they stoned Paul, left him for dead, and so this trip was not without persecution. They then return to the Syrian Antioch and make their report. Now, after the first missionary journey comes Acts 15, the Jerusalem Council. All of Acts 15 is given to it. It occurred in 49 AD, and there was a huge theological issue at stake. Look at chapter 15, verse 1. Some men came down from Judea and began teaching the brethren there in Antioch, unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved. They were adding circumcision to faith as a necessary component of salvation. These people are called the Judaizers. That was the issue at stake. There's a lengthy debate about it, and that's recorded for us in verses 6 to 21. But I like James' summary. Chapter 15, verse 19, James says, therefore, it's my judgment that we do not trouble those who are turning to God from among the Gentiles. In other words, no, that's not true. They do not have to add circumcision in order to be saved. They come to the right conclusion. They safeguard the gospel. This was a crucial gathering. Do you understand that even Peter himself at one point gave in? You remember Galatians 1? You want to know the darkest day in the history of the church? It wasn't the Dark Ages. It was during the life of the apostles. It was when the Judaizers convinced everybody, including Peter, that Peter went along. He wasn't convinced, but he went along because of peer pressure. And essentially, they all became overtly, ostensibly convinced that you had to add circumcision and the works of the law to be saved. And only one man stood against it, and that was Paul. The gospel came within a hair's breadth of being lost in the first century. That's why Acts 15 is so important. The church gets together and says, no, wait a minute, this isn't true. This doesn't have to be done. They safeguard the gospel. And they also urge the Gentiles to sacrifice their personal liberty out of love for the Jews. So basically they say, in consideration of the Jews that are worshiping with you, here's what you Gentile Christians need to do. Not for salvation, but as a sort of sacrifice of your liberty to love these people. Don't eat food sacrificed to idols. That was obviously offensive to Jews. And don't commit fornication. Now, that's an odd one to follow right on the heels of don't eat meat sacrificed to idols. Obviously, fornication is forbidden. This is probably not talking about all forms of fornication. Most commentators agree this is probably a reference to breaches of the Jewish marriage law, which forbade marriage between close relatives. Read Leviticus 18, 6 to 18. That was a very common practice among the Gentiles. And so, in acknowledgement of the Jewish regulations, the Gentiles were asked in the churches not to marry close relatives. Number three, they were not to eat meat from animals that were killed by strangling, and they were not to probably drink blood is the idea here. And the reason for these last two is because of the Levitical sacrifices, and you remember the emphasis on the life of the flesh being in the blood, Leviticus 17. It was so ingrained in the Jews because of the sacrificial system that they asked the Gentiles in the churches to abstain from these things out of love and consideration for the Jews. So they got the gospel right, and they encouraged the sacrifice of personal liberty for the love of others. They sent out a letter to the churches expressing that, and Paul carries the letter back to Antioch. Now, at this point in the church's history, in the flow of Acts, comes Paul's letter to the Galatians. Remember those churches he visited on his first journey? This is his very first letter. It's written shortly after the Jerusalem Council, and it's to the churches in that southern region of Galatia that he founded on that first journey. Apparently, these Judaizers that were a problem in Antioch had spread even there after leaving the city of Antioch. And the purpose of this letter is to defend justification by faith alone, to attack those who would add even obedience to God in circumcision or anything else, be it baptism or you name it, add anything else to faith as a necessary ingredient to salvation. That brings us to Paul's second missionary journey. It's recorded for us in Acts 15, beginning in verse 36 through 18, verse 22. It's Paul and Silas. You remember Paul and Barnabas had a falling out about John Mark, and so they part ways. Paul and Silas, and Luke joins them at Philippi. The region is Asia Minor and Europe, some 2,800 miles covered in the second missionary journey. And it lasts from 49 A.D. to 52 A.D. And you see a list there of the major cities that are covered. The ones I want you to note, beginning at Philippi, because what you have is God's call to Paul to take the gospel into Macedonia. This marks another one of those crucial shifts in Acts. Paul had intended to go east to Asia, but the Spirit somehow forbids him from doing that and redirected him through a Macedonian vision over to Greece. And so Paul shows up in Philippi. It's incredible to think that many of us have our ancestors in Europe, and it's because of this monumental event recorded in just a few verses in Acts that our legacy is a Christian legacy rather than an utterly pagan one. The second missionary journey takes him back to South Galatia, to the cities he'd visited before, to Macedonia. There in Philippi, Lydia is converted, the Roman jailer. He goes to Thessalonica, Berea, and then the major event in Athens, which you're familiar with when he goes before the Areopagus there in Athens. And then he meets Aquila and Priscilla in Corinth in chapter 18, and he spends 18 months in Corinth. While he's there in Corinth, he writes his next letters, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. And it was written about 51-52 AD. The purpose of 1 Thessalonians was to give instructions for a new church. 2 Thessalonians, corrections about the second coming and the day of the Lord. This was very shortly after his founding this church on this second missionary journey. The third missionary journey is from Acts 18:23 through chapter 21, verse 16. It's Paul, apparently Timothy, and Luke joins him at points as well. This covered Asia Minor, Europe, and Palestine, and the distance is covered 1,600 miles. It was the longest of his missionary journeys, 52 to 57, because he spent almost 3 years, as you can see there, in Ephesus. So he spends 3 years there in Ephesus. And while he's in Ephesus, he writes 1 Corinthians from Ephesus in about 55 AD during those 3 years, probably near the end of the 3 years that he was there, and it was to correct various problems in the Corinthian church that he had founded. But at the end of his stay in Ephesus, there's a riot. You remember? So because of that, Paul has to leave. He returns then to Macedonia and to Greece. While he's on the return from Macedonia, after he has to be forced out of Ephesus by the riot, he writes 2 Corinthians, possibly from Philippi, and its purpose was to defend his apostleship. He also writes Romans from Corinth in about 56 AD to the church in Rome, defending the righteousness from God, true salvation from God. And shortly thereafter, he begins a journey to Rome. It begins in Acts 21, goes through the end of the chapter. You remember, we talked about this earlier. In 57 AD, he sails for Jerusalem. He's taken into custody because of the things that happened there at the temple, the near riot that occurs at the temple, and he's taken up to Caesarea on the coast, and he's kept there for 2 years. And then on from 60 to 62, Paul's first Roman imprisonment, and those 2 years of Roman imprisonment end with a verdict from Caesar, to whom he had appealed, of innocent. So this is what it looks like, this journey to Rome. You can see that once he was arrested here in Jerusalem, he was taken up to the coast to Caesarea, and then once he appealed to Caesar, he was taken over to Rome. You remember they get into the cyclone, into the storm, and end up shipwrecked, and eventually they make their way to Rome. So he heads to Jerusalem, he's arrested there, and he's put on trial in Caesarea. I'm not going to cover all of this, but during those 2 years in Caesarea, he appeared before several Roman officials. And this is important, because this showed to all those who read Luke's account that Christianity was not antagonistic to the Roman government. And the Roman officials said this. Paul appears before Felix, he appears before Festus, he appeals to Caesar because of that whole event with Festus, who didn't have a lot of sense. Paul before Agrippa, and he has there before Agrippa, he defends himself with both Festus present and with Agrippa present. And notice their reactions. Festus gives his personal opinion. Paul's mad. Agrippa gives his personal opinion. Paul is very persuasive. Almost you have persuaded me to become a Christian. But then together, in spite of their personal opinions of Paul, they mutually agree legally on Paul's innocence and say that he could be released if he had not appealed to Caesar. But of course, that was in God's perfect plan. And so Paul continues from Caesarea through the shipwreck to Rome at last. What I want you to see is that New Testament history ends with the rest of the story. The rest of the story hasn't been written yet. It's Jesus continuing to build his church and someday returning to take control of what is rightfully his. That's the rest of the story of the New Testament.
That's Tom Pennington here on The Word Unleashed, concluding his 12-part series, An Aerial View of the New Testament. Tom will begin another series on our next program. Do join us then. But Tom, before we close our time today, can you give us an overall summary of the New Testament?
Well, the New Testament describes the ongoing story of Jesus Christ as he continues to build his church. As we've studied together, the four Gospels record Jesus' life and his earthly ministry. The book of Acts records the first 30 years of the church. And the rest of the New Testament describes why Jesus came and how his church is supposed to function until the second coming, which is recorded in the last book of the New Testament, the book of Revelation. But the true conclusion of the New Testament story really remains yet in the future, when Jesus Christ comes back and takes back what is rightfully his, and all people stand before him, and every knee bows and every tongue confesses that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God his Father.
Thanks, Tom. And now for Tom Pennington and the entire team, I'm Bill Wright. Thanks for listening to The Word Unleashed, exalting God's glory, explaining God's truth.